You have that experience.
Yes, I know. House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development, come to order, February 5th. Apologize for the delay. We had a long floor session. Appreciate your patience as we make the transition. We expect the rest of our members to be coming shortly. So we're going to go ahead with the information meeting in hopes that some of our fellow committee members are making their way here, and that way we won't make you wait as long, at least as far as the presentation. So we're excited to continue our conversation about higher education and sustainability initiatives. And if Mark Lonergan's here, can budge forward and to get us started with the report on what's going on at the University of Oregon. And if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself for the record as you get started, appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. Is this on? Are we okay?
Yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to come and speak with you today on behalf of the University of Oregon. My name is Mark Lonergan. I'm a professor of chemistry at the University of Oregon and a director of the Material Science Institute. I want to give an overview of some of the sustainability initiatives at the University of Oregon, but these will be from sort of my perspective. There are a large range of initiatives going on at the university. It's impossible to cover them all. So I thought I would select some that have some personal connection to me. I'm actually a graduate of the University of Oregon. I went to high school close to your area, Chairman Reed, Hillsborough, in the shadow of Intel, actually before Intel existed. Had a wonderful chemistry teacher by the name of Michael Tennyson. And Michael Tennyson, actually, I ran into the hallways at the University of Oregon, and I was wondering why it is he was back here at U of O, because he had moved on to be a person dealing with outreach at the American Chemical Society. And it turns out he had come back to the University of Oregon to learn about green chemistry. And green chemistry is one of the major initiatives at the University of Oregon that ties to sustainability. And it's one of the areas that's really reshaping the curriculum at the University of Oregon. And it's received such national recognition that, in fact, someone from the University of Oregon, someone from the ACS from Washington, D.C., was coming all the way to the University of Oregon to learn about green chemistry. Green chemistry is a curriculum that is basically redefining the way we teach chemistry. It's teaching chemistry in a way that shows how you can do many of the processes that we used to teach in much more environmentally responsible ways. And two of my colleagues, Jim Hutchison and Ken Doxey at the Department of Chemistry, are basically national leaders. They wrote the book on how to do this, how to implement this in education, and they've now impacted through this summer green chemistry workshop where my former high school chemistry teacher had come back to learn about green chemistry. They've now impacted more than 160 programs throughout the nation in helping them implement aspects of this green chemistry program, teaching students about how, if they go into the chemical industry, they can do this in a more sustainable fashion. And there's even huge economic benefits to the university in that when you teach organic chemistry in particular in this way, the infrastructure needs are much reduced. You no longer need lots of fume hoods and things like that. You can do this in an open space, and you can still teach all the concepts, but do it in a much more economical way. And so it's really, as with many sustainability things, always a win-win-win sort of situation. And so that's one example, I think, of how sustainability is sort of changing our curriculum at the University of Oregon. I think another important point is that it's changing and allowing us to interface with the community in many powerful ways. My oldest son, is a student at Roosevelt Middle School in Eugene, and he came home the other day and was really thrilled to be a part of a design charrette that involves the building of bike shelters as part of trying to enhance the sustainable cities through the Oregon Transportation Research and Education Consortium. They funded a program at the University of Oregon for architecture to go out and help implement at the building of these bike shelters at local schools. And my son was a part of that process, was thrilled to learn about what was going on at the University of Oregon, and was really thrilled also to see his love of biking being stimulated among the entire middle school and even elementary school populations as a really viable way to get to and from school, again, part of building sustainable cities. The topic of sustainability has also, of course, changed much of the faculty scholarship and research. It's central to much of the research programs that go on at the University of Oregon. And I think I can give one example, and that is the Safer Nanomaterials and Nanomanufacturing Initiative. This is something that was born out of the University of Oregon as part of the Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute, or NAMI, and it's a multi-university initiative that is bringing together researchers from the state of Oregon, central to the University of Oregon, in basically looking at how we can implement some of the ideas of green chemistry, how we can put them into nanoscience. So how can we think about all of the technology that's going to come out of nanoscience and think about it at sort of the very earliest stages, instead of letting all this technology just sort of go and be applications driven, but at the very, very earliest stages, how can we think about in putting in and programming in the green chemistry principles, the green science principles that are necessary to make sure that we pursue the path down to applications based on nanotechnology in a very responsible way. And so we're looking at trying to understand how nanomaterials interact with biological systems. We collaborate with, for example, toxicologists at Oregon State University. We're trying to understand what those impacts are, both positive and negative for therapeutic applications, but also understand how nanostructure makes things different. A big chunk, like a gold coin, looks like gold. A nanomaterial made out of gold can look a completely different color and have a completely different impact on the body, and we need to understand those things. We need to implement the proper principles sort of at the ground floor so we can use nanoscience in a responsible way. And the Safer Nanomaterials and Nanomanufacturing Initiative is one of the major things that we have going on at the University of Oregon that helps us do that. Also related to that are a bunch of other programs that I don't have time to go into. A lot of them are near and dear to my heart as a director of the Materials Science Institute. They involve things like the Green Materials Center. We have a Keck initiative to look at the biological impacts of nanomaterials, and also a lot of other programs that span all the professional schools, the colleges, and so there's really a lot of activity and a lot of scholarship going in that area. The last sort of important thing to talk about, perhaps in this committee, is sort of the relationship of our efforts in sustainability to economic development. And we've, in particular in the Materials Science Institute, also through these signature research centers such as ONAMI, have worked really hard to have an outward focus to our program, to take the things that we're doing in the university and look outward and try to connect with industries that will ultimately be employing our students, trying to connect with a lot of the industry clusters that are important in Oregon. And one of the things that we've been doing in that area is developing what are called high-tech extension services. And the sort of ONAMI high-tech extension service at the University of Oregon is CAMCOR, the Center for Advanced Materials Characterization in Oregon. And this is a facility that allows us, that, you know, industry from all over the state and, in fact, all over the nation comes and uses this state-of-the-art facility for characterizing nanomaterials. This is now being modeled or mimicked, I should say, in a new sort of connecting to a new industry cluster, and that's the area of renewable energy and hence the connection to sustainability. These are efforts that in part come out of the Oregon Built in Environment and Sustainable Technologies Signature Research Centers, and what we're trying to do is to take this CAMCOR model that we have for this high-tech extension service and extend it to the photovoltaic cluster, so the solar energy cluster in particular in the area of photovoltaics. We've started to build up the infrastructure for this shared research lab, and for example, we already have approximately 6 engineers from SpectraWatt, a company that is considering locating their operations just outside of or in Hillsboro. They're actually working in our facility, working on their technology right now. And so we have some in my lab, some in a shared facility, and these are the types of outward connections that we'd like to make, both to help stimulate economic development, but also so that our students have strong connections to some of their future employers. Another aspect of that is an internship program that we've developed. We've developed a master's internship program that bridges bachelor's in chemistry, physics, and engineering into various industry clusters. And we've done this in a variety of areas, the high-tech microelectronics area, polymer industry. We're starting one in biotech, optics, a variety of other areas. And our newest thrust area, which is beginning this summer, is in the area of photovoltaics. So again, trying to help train the workforce that is going to be needed for the influx, the hopeful continued influx of photovoltaic manufacturing companies and companies that support them into Oregon. And so we actually, through this program, collectively it's been in existence for about 10 years, connecting to all these industry clusters. We've placed over 200 interns in various companies, Intel, Hewlett-Packard, Ben Research, Invitrogen, and all of those interns, about 90%, 90, 95% have all been given permanent job offers. So it's been a really good bridge to these industries, and we're now starting it in the area of photovoltaics, partnering with companies like SolarWorld and SpectraWatt and Sharp just over the river in Washington. And so those are some of the ways in which these initiatives are connecting to economic development. In closing, I guess I just want to say that I think sustainability is something that is having a real impact in the University of Oregon, and we're at a really critical juncture on how it's really going to blossom and grow at the University of Oregon. When I first came to the University of Oregon in the 1980s, there was something just forming called the Material Science Institute. It had about 4 faculty members. I am now the director of that institute. It has approximately 17 faculty members and about $8 million in annual research expenditures. I see now the seeds of sustainability really taking off in much the same way I saw this Material Science Institute, but in a much broader way, reaching much further across the university and really stimulating lots of interesting connections both within the university and without the and outside the university. And we'd really love if any of you have the opportunity to come down and visit some of these facilities, some of our efforts, talk to the people that are doing the work. I should also say that CAMCOR in particular, our high-tech extension service, and also this new solar facility, which I forgot to mention the acronym, SUNRISE, Support Network for Research in Solar Energy, will have a representation at the Oregon Business Development Day that I believe will be here on February 18th. And so, Chairman Reed and the rest of the committee, I thank you for your time. Be happy to address any questions.
Thank you very much. One quick one. SpectraWatt, is that the organization sort of funded by Intel?
It is part of the Intel Venture Fund, and it's at a critical point right now on whether or not it's going to locate in the Hillsborough area or not. We're doing everything we can to make this a welcoming place for them.
Thank you. Right. Representative Polley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to have you here speaking of your programs, which I'm familiar with a few of them. But I was wondering if you could comment, speaking of sustainability in these economic times, of how the University of Oregon and your CAMCOR has been able to leverage those private partners in helping pay for and expand that facility down there, and how much of that's been done without a lot of public dollars.
Yeah, I think one of the things we recognize is very important is the notion of leveraging and making sure we leverage public investment. And I think that the CAMCOR facility in particular is one where there has been a major investment through ONAMI in helping put some of the building in place, but then also very important investments from private investors such as Lori Loke, who's basically helped us build up much of our infrastructure. But it turns out the pieces of equipment that live within the Center for Advanced Materials Characterization, that live within that ONAMI, space, in total are in greater value than the entire building. And almost every piece of that equipment has been funded through grants from, for example, the National Science Foundation or other shared instrumentation grants that really help us leverage that investment to get other things. We've also entered into various relationships with certain industries that are also helping us fund these endeavors. And so, for example, FEI Corporation has been a really good partner in letting us have some equipment that we can use down at that facility at greatly reduced or under very sort of special arrangements that help us get much better equipment than we would be able to otherwise. We've also had various manufacturers donate equipment to the facility as well. And so all of these things are really helping us build a broad resource base of federal investment, state investment, private investment, and also industrial investment. I should also just add that, of course, in our internship program, they're making a huge investment in our internship program because every intern is paid a salary by the companies that are partnering with us. And so we're looking for those leveraging opportunities.
Representative Vince.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Professor, for being here. One thing I found about the legislature's lack of knowledge about a subject area doesn't restrict our ability to ask questions. So please keep that in mind.
I don't know much about the legislative process.
Okay, well, here. You mentioned as you were going through that in your area you apply a, quote, proper set of principles. And rather than go into what that proper set might be, I just want to know who establishes those and where someone in your department finds them.
Yeah. They're actually being established by the communities of researchers that work in them. And so, for example, the green chemistry principles, there are principles on how to conduct chemistry in sort of a green way that have to do with things like, are you using as little raw material as you can? Are you using as environmentally benign materials as you can? And those principles have really been set forth by researchers in the area and now have been championed by something called the Green Chemistry Institute of the American Chemical Society. And so these entities, you know, grow up out of sort of the researchers and they put forth principles and they gain sort of popular acceptance. So the Green Chemistry Institute is one particular one that's setting forth some of these principles. But they're always subject to change and things like that.
Mm. So I would, am I correct in guessing that those principles drive in some, in maybe many respects, your activities in the department, or maybe at least drive maybe too strong a term, maybe guide is the better term. I'm just curious what prompts you guys to take a certain direction in your research, and then having decided that direction, how these principles then apply would be interesting, but how do we know what your department's doing? And that you know, nanotechnology is everywhere now. It's extraordinarily interesting. I'm just curious, when you come to us and say, well, we have just built these, I think it's an elevator to outer space is the one I keep hearing. Is that going to open soon?
Maybe I could just add a little bit to that. The questions, I asked a similar question to the OIT president with us on Tuesday about how to balance the needs of research, what you see out in the world and what you're good at, how those kinds of things tend to work against each other. I think that's sort of in line with your question. Okay. Just to
so I think the first thing, and I speak more for myself than I can speak for the entire, you know, faculty of the University of Oregon. I think that most researchers, first and foremost, decide on research problems based on interest. You know, what is their interest? What is their intellectual curiosity? Now, there are an infinite number of problems that one can choose to work on. There are an infinite number of questions that one can find out that we don't understand about how something operates. So in looking and narrowing the subset of questions that one might want to look at, that can be informed by what is that impact going to be on the broader community. And for me, as a researcher, one of the areas that I focus on is the area of energy research. Because to me, I believe that one of the greatest challenges to sustainability is energy. Where are we going to get clean energy? Where is that going to come from? And that sort of then informed that I would like to do research that somehow impacts energy. And so I work on sort of future generation photovoltaics. And I think one of the things that's really exciting about sustainability is that it provides a really nice connection, sort of a guiding principle, if you like, between science and society. And that's something that we're embracing in our education. It's something that we're embracing in our research, because researchers usually approach problems, and I tell my students this actually, my graduate students, I don't attach the word good or bad to most scientific results. It is what it is. And then you take that result and you put it in the context of sustainability and you start asking questions, is that good or is that bad? And so I think that the issues like sustainability, issues where we see needs in the community, issues where we see needs for the nation, those help inform the multitude of questions we could potentially ask within our knowledge area and help guide us in particular directions that will make a broader impact. And for me, that's the area of energy. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
Mr. Young, you did very well, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Thatcher?
Yeah, thank you. I just heard you talk about... Well, a result is what it is, but then you plug it into the context of sustainability, and then you apply the label good or bad. You know, that seems subjective to me. And I'm wondering, I mean, it seems like we've had a number of projects being touted as green, but then another group will say, well, no, it's ruining the environment. So how do you rectify and reconcile all those differences?
This is why the topic of sustainability makes such a wonderful educational opportunity. Because you're exactly right, that the answer you come out with right, depends on what your definition of sustainability is. The answer that you come up with depends on your lens. It depends on your metric for what it is you want to achieve. And so we actually have this course called Chemistry and Sustainability that we just started last year. And one of the things we talk about is, for example, life cycle analysis, you know, how you look at some result and how you try and figure out whether that's sustainable or not. And one of the tools that we use for a product, let's say, is this thing called life cycle analysis, where we basically look at from all the raw materials, all the way through making it, all the way through to the death of the product, you know, what are its impacts along the way? Even then, it's hard to ask and answer the it's hard to answer the question, is that sustainable? Because it depends on your metrics. And so these are reasons why we think in particular science literacy is absolutely crucial in helping society deal with some of these questions and understand them. And, you know, I was asked earlier about what are the metrics, you know, how do you, what's the decision-making process? And that's complex. I don't, you know, what are the rules you put forth about whether something is sustainable or not? And I don't have a good answer to that, but it's something we talk about a lot.
It's a good question, Representative Thatcher, and I think that sort of underscores some of the stuff that we get to talk about and have this discussion as well. If there aren't any other questions, I have one final one to just ask you if you could talk briefly about, I think you've touched on it in some extent in your previous comments already, but what would you highlight as a couple of emerging opportunities for the work you're doing and for the University of Oregon generally that we ought to pay attention to or things, ways in which we can help you exploit some of those opportunities?
I think I have my prejudices as, you know, the director, so I have a narrower lens than perhaps President Frohnmayer would. But I think a couple key areas are really those that you're seeing being identified through the Oregon Built Environment and Sustainable Technology Signature Research Center. And those, as we're going to hear from Professor David Saylor from Portland State a little bit later, one area is sort of in this area where of green buildings, sustainable architecture, you know, the built environment is a really, I think, powerful opportunity for the state and also where there's a lot of knowledge within the universities that can help contribute to that. What's near and dear to my own heart is really thinking about how we can continue to make Oregon really a center for high-tech industry, and in particular in the area of photovoltaics. And I think that we have a huge opportunity at the university to help train the workforce that's needed for that, to help provide the through our high-tech extension service, the types of infrastructure that's needed to help attract companies here. And so I think that's a really exciting opportunity where I'd really love to see where I grew up, which is now all sort of the Intels and things like that, grow up, Solar World's there, see more photovoltaic companies. We have a Hynix plant down in Eugene. Love to see it, and I think the university can really help in a lot of ways in that area. So, but it's my own narrow prejudices.
That's fine. Thank you very much. If there aren't other questions, we'll move on to our next panelist. I really appreciate you being here, and if you don't have to rush off somewhere, it'd be great to have you stick around and perhaps come back with questions. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I noticed we have a couple of chairs here, and I should have probably done this before, but maybe we could invite Dean Salwasser up and Professor Bowersox. Maybe you guys could sit together, and we can ask you both to go ahead.
Is the PowerPoint on this computer?
So, Professor Bowersox, you're on our agenda first. If you're prepared, you could go ahead, and Dean Salwasser gets ready to go on the PowerPoint.
I figured I'd go low tech. Hi, my name is Chairman Reed and members of the committee. My name is Joe Bowersox. I'm the director of the Center for Sustainable Communities across the street at Willamette University. I also happen to be a fifth-generation Oregonian, born and raised here in Salem, and like my compatriot from the University of Oregon, it's actually really exciting as an Oregonian to see the state and its institutions represented here today taking such a lead in the question of sustainability, particularly as we look at some of the challenges that face us as both a state and a nation in the wake of a growing economic crisis. And I think we can all agree along the lines with Woodrow Wilson that education has always been considered to be one of the engines of change and innovation within democratic societies. And I think one of the things that is really exciting about this panel today is that I think we would all agree that our institutions here in Oregon, regardless of our size, whether we're public or private, are ones or liberal arts institutions that we stand ready to help you as policymakers to make some of these hard decisions that need to be made in upcoming months as we try to reposition our economy and our society. I would also like to bring greetings from President Lee Pelton, who gives his regrets that he could not be here today. This is a topic that's extremely close to his heart. He feels very passionately about sustainability in higher education. And as one of his faculty members, I have looked to him for leadership and inspiration on this topic over the years. And he gives his deep regrets that he could not be here today. In telling the story of sustainability at Willamette University, we're different from the other universities that are here today, and I think that's a good thing. It's good to have diversity in education, diversity in higher education within the state. We are a liberal arts institution, first and foremost. We are a private institution with 1,800 undergraduates and 700 graduate students. When we approach the question of sustainability in higher education, it's quite different from the way that it can be approached at say, a Research One institution in the state. We don't have graduate students. We face a particular mandate where our teaching and our research have to come together. We must find ways that we can both improve the critical thinking of our undergraduate students as well as our graduate students and find ways to link that critical thinking and critical communication skills that we seek to develop in them with kind of hands-on practical experience. And I think we see that actually happening with the way that we're approaching sustainability at Willamette University. One of the other things that's very unique, I think, about sustainability at Willamette, and here kind of speaking more broadly, is it's not an add-on. It's not something that is new to our institution. And, in fact, one of the things that we've tried to do over the recent years is to really pull upon a tradition of sustainability that we see actually reflected in our motto, "Not unto ourselves alone are we born." And whether it's we're looking back to two of our early physics graduates from 1926 and 1927, Gerald Pearson and Daryl Chapin, who were responsible for the development of the modern photovoltaic cell, which is on the roof of these buildings and going up in Salem, and we're hoping to have Sanyo Solar here up and running by the end of the month, or by the end of the year, excuse me. That's something that we kind of take pride in, that those folks came from our institution. And when we're trying to inspire our students, we look back to that tradition, or we look back to the tradition of some of our faculty members that in the late 1960s, early 1970s, created one of the first environmental science programs in the nation in 1973 and developed an alternatives future program in 1977. We started to develop curriculum on sustainability in the early 1990s before it was kind of trendy. And we're actually quite proud of that, and we try to continue to develop on that. We have a long ways to go, and we certainly are not without our faults, and we're seeking to continue to innovate within those areas. One of the things that's also kind of unique the way that we've approached it is, unlike some other institutions, is we've really tried to make sustainability be part of our campus culture. And in the way that we practice it on our campus as well as what happens in the classroom, we actually see our campus as kind of a living laboratory for sustainability. So first and foremost, what we've tried to do is to improve our sustainability efforts within our infrastructure. And we've done this not by hiring a sustainability consultant or a sustainability coordinator or a sustainability manager, but by putting faculty, students, and administrators in charge, and giving and empowering them through our Sustainability Council to actually help create policies for our institution. And one of these things that it's done is it's kept sustainability from being somehow kind of segmented within our institutional structure. That is something that we are continuing to see leadership come in areas that you would not necessarily expect, whether it's our grounds crew or whether it's our classified staff or whether it's in the faculty and students. When it comes to our academic opportunities for sustainability, this is something that we've seen an awful lot of growth in about the last 7 or 8 years. Within the College of Liberal Arts, as I kind of outline in my prepared testimony, our offerings in sustainability are very interdisciplinary. Many of them are kind of focused within our environmental science department, but we also have unique offerings in our history department, anthropology, economics, even in our mathematics department and our Spanish language department as well, through kind of providing some encouragement and small incentives through a mini grant, through some mini grants. We have mathematics faculty that have developed a series of sustainability exercises for use in a series of calculus classes. That's one of the things that we see that we can do that is a little bit different from other places, that we're trying to incorporate sustainability and sustainability concepts throughout our curriculum. We, of course, see more traditional courses in sustainability within the College of Liberal Arts, whether it's courses in forest ecology and policy, sustainable agriculture, or environmental geology. Beyond the College of Liberal Arts, we have a lot of innovations that are occurring within our graduate programs. In the law school, in our College of Law, we have the first sustainability certificate program in the nation. It was founded by one of our faculty members, Robin Morris Collin, who offered the first sustainability law course in 1992, and has been one of our key movers for sustainability on campus over the years. We're very proud of this program, and it certainly puts our law school on the map for that. In our graduate program in business management at the Atkinson School, we are in the process of creating a sustainability emphasis for sustainable management. That will be up and running this fall in September. In addition to those sort of offerings within the traditional MBA program, the Atkinson School will also be, through its executive development program, offering a certificate in sustainable enterprise, and that will be starting this April with their first cohort going through that program. Additionally, the Atkinson School will be offering a certificate in social action research, which is focused on questions of social well-being and business management, and they will also be partnering with Peter Senge on development of a sustainable leadership workshop that will be taking place in Portland in May of this year. Beyond these kind of more traditional curricular developments on our campus, we also have new initiatives within my center, the Center for Sustainable Communities. Part of the way that we see our job at the center is to use the small budget that we have and to leverage it to improve the curriculum within our campus, both in the College of Liberal Arts and beyond, and also to provide incentives and seed money for the development of sustainability research by our faculty, as well as collaborative research of our students with our faculty. Additionally, one of our main mandates within the center is to find ways that we can partner outside of the institution with community members, with public agencies, or with nonprofits, and even with for-profit entities. And so we've developed a partnership with the City of Salem, working on some of the Vision 2020 stuff, particularly with regards to alternative transportation. And we are also working with a series of nonprofits and for-profit entities on the question of public transportation as well. One of the other things that we've done just recently within the Center for Sustainable Communities is we have secured and purchased a 300-acre research forest in the West Salem Hills. It's literally 15 minutes from campus, 8 miles as a crow flies, which we hope over the upcoming years to develop into kind of a sustainability field station, particularly with regards to small woodlands forestry, sustainable forestry, as well as sustainable agriculture. With those comments, that kind of gives you a brief overview of some of the things that we are doing on our campus and how it maybe differs from some of the other things that you might be hearing from my colleagues here today. And I thank you for your time, and I'm quite willing to answer some questions.
Thanks very much. That might be a nice segue to Dean of the College of Forestry. Perhaps we can hear from you and then take some questions for the both of you.
Thank you, Chair Reed. I'm Hal Salwasser. I'm the Dean of the College of Forestry and Director of the Oregon Forest Research Laboratory at Oregon State University. Excuse me, Terry, is there some way to get that on the screen? You've got a handout that mirrors what I'm going to be covering here. At Oregon State, we look at sustainability through a prism. It's more than the standard triangle or overlapping circles that you usually see. Certainly, there's a social dimension that focuses on enhancing human and community well-being. There's an environmental dimension that is basically lightening the human footprint, an economic one, and an institutional one to improve governance and strengthen decision-making. So everything that we do is looking through this prism. We're in a state that sets the context. Oregon has a reputation for leading the way on sustainability and environmental things, and so it gives us it's just part of our culture. At Oregon State, we are the state's land, sea, space, and sun grant institution, and those programs have been about sustainability all the way from the start, before anybody had invented that terminology. The fortunate people in our state are eating every day. They're living in a home. The home is warm. They've got good clothes. So food, fiber, fuel, and shelter are fundamental to a land-grant institution's mission, and that's a foundation for sustainability, is to keep those productive and resilient. We're undergoing a revision of the university's strategic plan, and we will have three signature areas of excellence that they have long titles, but we like to talk about them as healthy planet, healthy people, and healthy economy. On the education side, our students, without any prompting from faculty, took the initiative to vote themselves a fee, $8.50 a quarter, to go toward buying carbon offsets for the energy that's used on campus. And they're at around 80% offsets of assuring that renewable energy is being produced somewhere in the grid to equal to the amount of energy that we're using. They're aiming for 100%. They've created a sustainability center. So it's really important to recognize the initiative of the students. We've got a number of courses that list sustainability or sustainable in their description. They're presented in Corvallis, over in Cascade, eCampus, and one out at Hatfield Marine Science Center. The reason those numbers add up to more than 43 is that it's the same course being presented in several different places. Over 300 courses link two or more of those dimensions that I showed you on the prism, and we've got three study abroad programs. In sum, eight specific degree programs have sustainability as part of their focus. College of Business has a sustainable business initiative. There's an online graduate program in sustainable natural resources, and over in Cascade, it's a very heavy focus. As a research institution, we have a tremendous contribution, and I look at this in the sense and say, we're going to educate the students who are going to go to work in a greener economy. We need to make sure that there's jobs in that greener economy for them, and so a lot of this research is focused on the products and the processes that will maintain Oregon's competitiveness in that greener economy. And you can see the larger categories there. What I draw your attention to is if you add up the numbers along the bottom, it's more than $153 million of research, and that's not state money. That's all been leveraged by faculty employed by the university getting outside grants and contracts. And Scott Ashford, director of the School of Civil and Construction Engineering, will go through some of the engineering parts of this in a minute. We have the Extension Service, so outreach is a major part of what we do in the area of sustainability. And especially draw your attention to this Climate Masters program, where we've teamed up with the University of Oregon to deliver a short course. We've got a sustainable living education program. In fact, our faculty are the national leaders in that and have trained others across the country. And then the Extension has these Master Gardener, Master Woodland Manager, Master Watershed, Master Naturalist programs, and those all contribute directly to sustainability. So just to put a wrap on it, OSU has a lot of capacity and a lot of strengths to bring to bear in renewable energy, ocean and fishery sustainability, climate, the green building, green practices, materials, rural communities. And I thank you for your attention, and I'll be happy to take questions.
Thanks very much. I think you did that very well, very efficiently, getting us an orientation. Are there
questions? Representative Holby?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this one's for Dean Selswiller. The College of Forestry, I visited there last year with Workforce and Economic Development, was very excited about your green materials part, and was wondering if you have an update on soy-based glues for particle board, trying to get rid of the formaldehyde, which seems to be a big issue in many states.
Chair Reed, Representative Holby, yes, we do. The faculty member that's leading that, Kai Chang Lee, is just opening up phase three. They're going to be developing adhesives that will go in exterior panels. They're developing adhesives that clothing manufacturers are taking a look at to get toxics out of some of the adhesives that are used in tennis shoes and running gear and that sort of thing. And he's got more work than he has time to do in taking that technology to the next level.
Well, I just wanted to express my how impressed I am with that foresight and the college moving forward with that, because I think if we can get that into the marketplace, it would be a huge boon for the state of Oregon to be the leader in that. So,
thank you.
I have a question for you, Professor Bowersox. As a, I'll confess that I'm a graduate of Willamette, so hopefully that doesn't cloud my judgment too much. But I'm wondering how Willamette, with all the advantages of a small school, does a good job connecting with some of the other things that big schools, or relatively big schools like Oregon State, do.
Chair and Reed, I think that's a very good question. I think one of the things that we've done is, you know, we're very ecumenical in the people that we partner with, and we've actually been working with the Sustainability Institute down at University of Oregon through our center to provide additional training for local public managers. So we provide, we host and we help support that program. I think that's a great program. That's just one example that we do. For some of our course offerings within at Willamette, those that have dealt with forestry and forest ecology, we have used Oregon State University's facilities, particularly down at H.J. Andrews over the years, and we've found that to be extremely beneficial. And one of the things that we can really do is we need to train our students to be hybrids. As we go into, you know, this new economy that we're facing, we need students that are not just simply scientifically literate, but are policy literate and economically literate. And what we think that we can do is we can train those at the undergraduate level and at the graduate level as well. And perhaps then our students go down to the College of Forestry, or perhaps they go to the Hatfield Marine Science Center, which many of our students have. And we can provide that sort of basic training that then can be built upon as they develop their graduate work. I think that's just a couple of examples how we've tried to do that. We certainly have room for improvement with that.
Thanks. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As observers of the student condition, can you guys give us a status report on where you think we are on the road to true sustainability?
Chair Reed, Representative Bentz, we have a long way to go on that journey. The growth in the human population, and at least prior to a few months ago, its increasing affluence worldwide meant there was more resources being consumed per capita by more capita, and it's going to require some major changes in lifestyles to get to a point to where the planet can sustain a reasonable quality of life for 8 to 9 billion people.
And Chairman Reed, Representative Bentz, I guess I would second Dean Salwasser's comments on that. I think one of the things that's very interesting is, I don't know if I would call it enthusiasm, but a kind of new realism amongst our students, at least the ones that kind of come through our doors in terms of the challenges that they face. I also think that, you know, through my almost 16 years at Willamette University, we've seen a change in what people are interested in. Growing up in Oregon and coming from kind of a farming and forestry background, you know, one of the things that I would always ask my students is, you know, how many of you think that you'll grow up to be foresters or to be farmers? And 15 years ago, no one would do that. Now, across the street, you know, I ask that question, and we have, you know, not 30%, but 10-15% of our students are seriously considering this. right? How can they contribute to to sustainable forestry or sustainable agriculture? They're going to have to make tough decisions in their lifestyle, absolutely. But I think there's a sort of new realism that I find extremely hopeful.
Oh, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it seems like there's a, not seems like there is a conflict between consumptive society, which we have, and sustainability, which we're trying to achieve. And our current economic situation suggests, the solution that's been suggested is that we consume more and rapidly to get back to where we were. So don't you anticipate that sustainability actually suggests that we become accustomed to the current economic downturn and maybe get used to it, as opposed to whatever it is we're supposed to do to get out of this quagmire?
You want to lead?
Easy question, sure.
Chairman Reed, Representative Bentz, boy, that's the $64 question. And I mean, I come from a political science public policy background, and as Chairman Reed knows, teach ethics as well. And you know, I think we're starting to have that sort of conversation, that you are bringing this question up as a policymaker, I think is extremely encouraging. That we see this being asked in the halls of Congress as we consider what should happen with the stimulus plan, right? I find that encouraging. Whether we're willing to make those sort of choices, I don't know. I think that conversation is beginning. However, you know, I do think that if we are going to spend, we can spend in different ways. If we are going to invest, we can invest in different ways. That we are going to continue to live in a society, a developed world, in a developed state, and we are going to continue to want a certain level of comfort, and we're going to still want to provide a certain level of social well-being to our students and to our children. And I think the thing is to try to redirect some of our efforts, maybe away from less sustainable industries, maybe revitalize some of those industries and see if we can find ways to minimize our footprint, ecological footprint, as well as our carbon footprint.
Chair Reed, Representative Bentz, I would just add to that that when I was a child, my grandmother was still living as if the Depression were on, and her lifestyle was much more conservative, conservation-oriented than our lifestyles are today. So I think the key is whatever we're going to consume and invest in, to do it wisely and do it with an eye to the future, that our goal is not to get back to the way we were living 5 years ago, but to transition into a future where our children and grandchildren can have a good quality of life without the kind of ecological effects that have gone along with our high standard of living. And producing the food and fuel and fiber and shelter that you use locally is a good place to start.
Thank you. That's a good question. Well, thank you guys very much for coming. I really appreciate it. We'll keep our conversation going. I'm mindful of the clock, so I want to make sure we have time for questions for all of our presenters. Thank you guys very much for coming. Next on our agenda, we have Scott Ashford and David Saylor. Maybe we can use that other chair and keep our momentum up. If you guys would be so kind as to introduce yourself as you get started, that would help. Thanks.
Okay. My name is Scott Ashford. I'm the head of the School of Civil and Construction Engineering at Oregon State University. I actually grew up a few blocks from here, went to Oregon State, and I've been out of state for about 25 years, and just came back recently to Oregon State, and I want to say it's an exciting time to be back, in Oregon. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to discuss OSU's involvement, specifically the College of Engineering's involvement on educational sustainability initiatives. At the College of Engineering, we're trying to address national and regional and local challenges by leading efforts to secure and develop clean sources of energy, to substantially reduce energy consumption, to reduce carbon emissions, improve energy storage and distribution, and manage and adapt existing technologies to accommodate these new energy alternatives. The College of Engineering, we're really looking at these challenges by adopting three different strategies. Our first strategy is to develop innovative engineering leaders for Oregon. Oregon employers need an educated workforce with the skills and necessary knowledge to meet the challenges that I talked about. One way that we're doing that is by working in and having the students exposed to alternative energy sources throughout the curriculum. Wave, solar, biofuels, wind energy. We're working into our classes so all the students are exposed to those. We are also providing hands-on experience to the students by having research opportunities for our undergraduates on some of the research that we're doing, as well as working on internships with local industry, such as Vestas and at Solar World. We're also delivering these engineering leaders by offering innovative degree programs. We have a pending degree right now in engineering, in energy engineering management, with the goal of really providing students that are going to be able to go out and work in the alternative energy field here in Oregon. The College of Engineering has over 4,000 students. We graduate about 700 engineers a year. Most of those students stay in Oregon and work for Oregon industry. For example, my school, we have a construction engineering management program. Last year, we graduated about 60 students. 90% of those students stayed in Oregon with Oregon employers. 90% of those students had jobs upon graduation. About two-thirds of those stayed here in Oregon working for Oregon employers. A second strategy that we're following is discovering high-impact solutions through niche area research. At OSU and the College of Engineering, we're national leaders in wave energy and in biofuel microreactor technology. We're international leaders in transparent electronics for solar energy, as well as the development of safe nuclear energy. And we're emerging leaders in other areas, such as green building materials and construction methods. By being leaders, what this allows us to do is, one, it allows us to bring federally funded research to Oregon. Recently, our engagement, also with partners from outside the state, we've had wins of about $75 million of research in the alternative energy sector. Much of that has come from the federal government, Department of Energy, National Science Foundation. This leadership also allows us to attract the top faculty and students from across the country, and this leadership then allows us to deliver on bringing these, developing these innovative engineering leaders. I was talking with a colleague of mine over in mechanical engineering a couple of days ago. He was talking about the top five students in mechanical design applying for graduate school. All of them are interested in renewable energy, and all of them want to come to Oregon State, get that education, and those are the students that are going to be joining our workforce here in the future. And the third area that we're, our third strategy is delivering on these high-impact solutions. So we got to follow through on the research and get it implemented. Okay, one way that we're able to do that is through collaborative efforts with Oregon industry. For example, you heard about we're working with Onami, you heard about earlier. Also Oregon Best, you heard about them earlier. For my own part, I'm working with Oregon Best on a green building materials laboratory. It's a collaborative effort with the College of Forestry and with Portland State, and you might hear a little bit about that with from Dr. Saylor here in a few minutes. We also can deliver on these solutions through startup companies. The research in the College of Engineering has recently spun out five startups. These become Oregon companies that create jobs for Oregonians. At the broader level, I guess if you look at the system level, I am on a committee formed by the Board of Higher Education that was chartered. It's called the Sustainability Initiative Committee. It's chaired by David Yaden. This committee is charged to lead a collaborative effort that sets the system and its institutions on a course to become recognized international leaders in sustainability. The committee includes representatives from the campuses as well as industry, the non-government sector, nonprofits, as well as the government. The board believes that by integrating core strengths and leveraging funds to capitalize on Oregon's strengths in sustainability, that our higher education system can be a world leader in education, research, facilities management, and community outreach as it relates to sustainability. Their action plan will be finished. Our action plan will be finished in November of 2009, November of this year. Chairman Reed, earlier you asked, what are some of the emerging opportunities? I've come from the University of California system. I've been out of state for a long time. And what I see, one of the opportunities I see is the continued funding that the university system has gotten through ETEC. What we're using those funds for at the College of Engineering is really putting in the infrastructure that allows us to compete for the federal funding so we can bring that research money from outside the state. New faculty positions, renovated labs and equipment that allows us to do this top research and become national and international leaders. With that, I guess I'd like to thank the committee for hearing my comments, and I'd certainly be open to any questions.
Thanks. I'm confident we will have some questions, but maybe we can proceed and then take your questions together. Sorry, I make you guys musical chairs here as you switch places.
Okay. Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Saylor. I'm a professor in mechanical and materials engineering at Portland State University. It's a pleasure to be here today before you to give you a broad overview of sustainability activities at Portland State University. I have three goals in this presentation. First is just that broad overview of what we value at Portland State related to sustainability, what some of the infrastructure is that we have in place to help us pursue those goals in sustainability. And then I'm going to move on to, of course, the discussion of the recent Miller Grant for Sustainability that is going to really help us accelerate some of our activities in sustainability areas. And then finally, I'm going to close with just a brief description of some concrete examples of what we're doing in sustainability as it relates to certain research projects. So to start with, Portland State has been interested in sustainability. It's really been part of our culture for quite some time. And a number of years ago, the university, as part of its strategic planning process, identified sustainability as a key theme that we wanted to really embed in everything we do across the university. We made a very conscious decision to not build a Department of Sustainability or a College of Sustainability, but to rather to create a center that was really cross-campus in its origins and its actions. And the four broad themes that we focus on, that we identified at least as being important in our research in this area, in our education, are first of all the relationships between human and natural systems, the sustainable urban communities, the built environment, and how social and economic systems interact in a sustainable urban climate, mechanisms for change around sustainability solutions, so how people actually make choices or behavioral decisions around the concepts of sustainability. And then finally, measurement and evaluation and evaluation of sustainability initiatives in terms of their progress and their successes. Our aspirations and goals in sustainability, what Portland State has identified as some what we might call mid-range goals, are that we want to be the university of choice in the Northwest for students and faculty interested in pursuing sustainability education and research. We want our graduates to have a certain stamp of sustainability literacy with them. Every student that graduates, we want them to really be known for having that literacy and sustainability. Third, we want Portland State to be recognized nationally and globally as a top-tier university around sustainability and sustainable urban communities. And finally, it's very important to us that we pursue all of our sustainability activities in a framework that allows us to link with local, regional partners, both from industry, community, and governments. And again, the phrase "the living laboratory" pops up frequently in these sorts of discussions. So we've had the Sustainability Center at Portland State since about 2004, and we've been pursuing a wide range of activities related to that. And as you probably all know, very recently we had a huge opportunity presented to us by the Miller Foundation, and this is a $25 million 10-year challenge gift. And it's focused on sustainability. It's administered through our Center for Sustainable Processes and Practices. And the challenge part of that is that every year we can expect to receive up to $2.5 million from the Miller Foundation, provided that in the prior year we could demonstrate that we brought in an additional $2.5 million of external resources for sustainability-related work. So that can be a combination of research grants and philanthropic donations. And we are very confident that we're not going to have any problem with that. In fact, in this very first year, we've already exceeded that match. So, the Miller Grant is going to, as I said, be administered through that Center for Sustainable Processes and Practices and help us move some of our capacity building efforts forward, both in the student experience, research, curricular development, and community engagement. Very recently, we initiated our first RFP cycle for these funds, and with some of the funds going to center infrastructure, faculty, fellows, and staff, we made available about $1.5 million for sustainability projects. And what really amazed everyone was that we got 99 proposals from within Portland State. And with an external review process where the reviewers were very complimentary about how a very large fraction of those proposals were very competitive, we ended up funding 11. And those projects are just starting to move forward right now as I speak. They started technically January 1st. We have, along with that, we have opportunities for student initiatives where students will be able to propose ideas for sustainability projects. We have RA fellowships and postdoctoral opportunities and a proposal matching fund opportunity that, in fact, I think we just had our first success story in that. Last week we got an NSF environmental sustainability project funded around solar and green roofs that I was part of. So we're moving forward very, very quickly with some of those activities. Next, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that have been going on at PSU before the Miller Foundation opportunity and things that are going to be strengthened by the presence of that. Certainly, we have a lot of educational opportunities around sustainability at Portland State University. We have undergraduate sustainability and global environmental change clusters in the sophomore year where students can take a cluster of courses focused on those areas. We have bachelor's degrees in environmental studies. We have a number of new sustainability-related courses that have come on the books in the last 2 years. And many additional graduate and undergraduate courses across all disciplines, including in my department, where we have a building science focus that has produced many successful folks for the green building industry. I'd like to finally wrap up with a brief discussion of a few concrete examples of some sustainability research that we're doing at PSU. And, I apologize if this is sort of skewed towards my own research, but that's obviously where I feel most comfortable. One of the first projects that I got funded when I came to Portland State, I've been at Portland State about 6 years now, and it was the largest project of my career by far. I teamed up with some former colleagues from off-campus, other universities, and several from Portland State in different departments across the university, and we brought in a very competitive NSF biocomplexity proposal focused on trying to understand how people respond to heat, excessive heat waves, and poor air quality, And whether they change their behavior in response to those types of episodes, and whether the presence or absence of public advisories impacts that behavioral change. And so that is just, it's been a great project that really exemplifies some of the things that we care about in sustainability. We're trying to really understand how public policy can be better formulated to make these public advisories more impactful in terms of affecting the actual events. The next project I wanted to summarize is really what I would consider to be probably the best example that I've seen of leveraging many different sources of funding to solve a big problem. This is our Green Roof Research Program, which initiated with a very small grant from the EPA, where we had partnered with a local company. And it grew rather quickly with several linked grants from the EcoWorks Foundation, City of Portland, and Girding Edlin, and more recently with some funding from Oregon Built Environment and Sustainable Technologies Signature Research Center. And finally, just relatively recently, we received a fairly prestigious grant from the U.S. Green Building Council. They received 216 proposals in their very first call for proposals for green building research. They ended up pre-screening some of those. They reviewed a total of 39 full proposals and funded, I believe it was 13. And Portland State was the only institution in the Northwest to receive one of those grants, and it was for our Green Roof Research. So what we're, the fundamental question that we're trying to answer in that research program is how do green roof design decisions impact building energy and stormwater runoff quality and quantity? In terms of using the city or the campus as the living laboratory, we have a number of projects that involve students working on and around campus trying to understand energy efficiency in buildings. This is one of my students on the rooftop of our Broadway housing building taking measurements on that green roof. A student in the lab working on some of the thermal property assessment of green roof materials. And then finally, this is a project that I'm very proud of because it was student-initiated. This was an undergraduate student who wanted to understand how do operable windows, how are they used, first of all, and then how do they impact the building energy consumption, in particular in a building where the tenants do not pay their own energy bills, but we can monitor their individual energy use. And so we've done that. We've done implemented some interesting technology to understand when windows are open, when they're used, how they're used, monitoring the energy consumption. And then we can do building energy simulation and really try to understand how this human behavior of operating the windows impacts the energy consumption in the buildings. And finally, this is my closing slide. I just want to summarize one of the most exciting new opportunities that we have here at Portland State. As Scott mentioned earlier, we are building a green building research laboratory. We recently received funding as part of the PSU first round of Miller funding proposals, and in a separate request from Oregon Best, we received funds that are going to allow us to establish an OUS-wide facility that we're going to use in collaboration with our industry partners. So we've lined up a number of industry partners in Portland, which is actually pretty easy in the green building industry to find a lot of the leaders in the field only a few blocks away from our doorsteps. And we're going to be using that both for teaching, research, and practical problems that we're going to be solving for industry. And so we're just building up that lab as I speak here to you today, and we hope to have it opened and have an open house in September of this year. So with that, that's the end of my prepared comments. Thank you to the committee members and Chairman Reed for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for getting us oriented. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the wonderful presentation. I'm curious, the slides on green building make me wonder whether or not you, being in Portland, in a city that's known for having a green building cluster, do you find that you have a competitive advantage in attracting students and research dollars and professors who are interested in this particular topic? And is there sort of a feedback loop there?
Chair Reed, Representative Bailey, that's an excellent question, and it's a very easy answer. The answer is a definitive yes. We have a huge advantage in Portland. I've been in my office and had students just, you know, show up at my doorstep from colleges across the country, and they come to Portland even before they know anything about Portland State University. They know of Portland. They know of Oregon. They want to go study, you know, renewable energy or green buildings, energy efficiency. They come to one of the institutions here, and then they start looking for projects to work on. So it's definitely been a big help to be here, and having really the leaders in the field from the industry side in our backyard is also a huge opportunity for collaborations.
Thank you,
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This I appreciate your comments and the comments of all. And it seems like all the universities have work around renewable energy and such. So, but my question is a little more specific to comparing the different kinds of renewable energies that we have the ability to, I guess, go forward with. And one of my questions is more specific to the building, because as we had Economics 101 with Ed Whitelaw here last week, you know, they were talking about different parts of considerations for determining sustainable economics, and one of them was the natural considerations and social considerations of our economy as well. So I'm trying to get to the point here for you. So when we're looking at different kinds, for example, the difference between solar and wind, where solar can be pretty site-specific to a building and maybe doesn't have the challenges of providing transmission to the buildings, it seems like that would be a consideration that we would think about when we're thinking about sustainability. And is there a measurement to that you would be able to use in, I guess, figuring out to put a value, I guess, on that as far as our economic piece of sustainability goes? Was that kind of clear or not?
Yeah. So Chairman Reed and Representative Holby, I think that you know, what we have to do is really kind of you've heard a lot through the presidential election that it was kind of all of the above approach, and I think that what we have to do is look at all the different alternatives that we're faced with, and they're going to be more efficient or more appropriate for different situations. You know, certainly for, you know, looking at looking at net zero buildings where essentially they produce the energy that they're using, you know, solar is going to be a key component to that. But I think there's a lot of other electricity needs that we have where we'll need to depend on wind and wave and other sources of energy.
Can I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
So in just looking at the building specific, am I interpreting it correctly? Do you think solar is best suited for a building specific energy source as compared to the other ones that we're looking at?
Yeah, I would say that solar is a very good alternative for buildings, but I think you really you have to look at the whole life cycle and where that other energy is coming from, the energy involved with building the solar cells, how efficient those are, and how they really work in the building. So I think you have to look at the big picture. Certainly solar has some big advantages since you can generate, you know, the energy right there at the location.
Thank you.
I wanted to know, Professor Ashford, what brought you back to Oregon?
You know, Chairman Reed, I think that Oregon gets it. You know, I look at we talked a little bit earlier about reaching, you know, true sustainability, and I'm coming from Southern California for the last, you know, 10-15 years. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity up here. I think Oregonians understand some of our challenges. I think that, you know, everybody is trying to do their part, and you can. I can see that. I lived up here for. After I moved up, I was here for about 6 weeks, and I felt like I belonged up here. And it's a, you know, the support that we get from the legislature, you know, the resources that you provide to higher education, the Oregon, you know, the signature research centers, all of those things, I think, make it a great time to be here in Oregon.
If there aren't any other questions, I have one more for you. I appreciate the mention you made in your written testimony about the sustainability initiative and the action plan that's going to be complete later this year. Is there any sort of a preview you could offer us that might point us in the direction as we continue through the legislative session?
Well, Chairman Reed, I think that what we're doing, what I can say for the committee at least, is that we are having very strong engagement from all the campuses, you know, as well as the private sector and government and some of the NGOs, including student representation on the committee. And I think what we're looking at is really kind of doing the whole package. It's going to be through education, it's going to be outreach, and some of it's going to be student driven, but also looking at the research that's going on across the campuses and how the Oregon University system can become world leaders in sustainability.
Great. Well, I hope you can come back perhaps during the session with an update, perhaps.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions for this panel? Thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate your willingness to share your stories. With that, we are going to shift to the work sessions with a bit of a caveat. You'll recall, in our last session, we uncovered an amendment that needed to be made to House Bill 2258. We have the amendment, which is good news. The other news is that we don't yet have the fiscal. It's hard for me to imagine that the amendment that we have with us would cause any, but in order to do everything correctly, I'm going to suggest that we take about a three-minute recess. Barbara's going to run down and check on whether that fiscal statement is forthcoming, although we're getting a little note here. Ah, yes. We'll take care of that in a bit. So we'll take a three-minute recess. Please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We're in recess. Call the committee back to order. The bad news is that it looks like the fiscal statement on 2258 is not forthcoming, so we will carry over House Bill 2258 to our next agenda. Have I given the notice, the appropriate notice, so that we can do that? Okay. And we will proceed with the others that are on agenda, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2256. Barb, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a quick reminder of that bill.
2256 requires Oregon Housing and Community Services to establish a minimum threshold amount above which proposed housing grants or other housing funding proposals require review by the Oregon Housing Council. Authorizes OHCS to set future minimum thresholds by administrative rule and council with council approval.
Thank you. I think we had a good discussion on this one, and recollection is that it was ready to go. So if there isn't any discussion about the bill, I'd be interested in a motion to send it to the floor.
Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee recommend House Bill 2256 for the due pass recommendation to the floor.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2256 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. I'm told that it's inappropriate for me to simply say that I don't observe any objections, so we will proceed to a roll call vote. And if you'd please call the roll.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Foley?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Vice Chair
Benz.
Aye.
Chair Reed.
Aye. And the motion carries. Representative Bailey, would you be willing to carry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wood.
Thank you. Representative Wood.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to suggest that this may be consent calendar. I don't know.
It is a... I think that's a good point, Representative Witt. The thing that would worry me about it is the rules, just the summary, the threshold amount on award proposals and the review. The oversight, I think, is an important one. I don't think it will take Representative Bailey very long to explain it, and we should be able to move quickly. Thanks for your suggestion.
Thank you.
Very good. Close the work session on House Bill 2256 and open a work session on House Bill 2257. Barbara.
HB 2257 allows the Housing and Community Services Department to make loans or grants for the purpose of preserving affordable housing from the Community Development Incentive Project Fund without review or recommendation by the Community Development Incentive Advisory Board.
Thank you. Once again, that's one we saw recently, so hopefully it remains fresh for everyone. And if there isn't a comment or discussion on that, I'd be interested in a motion to send it to the floor as well.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of House Bill 2257 and move it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Holvey moves House Bill 2257 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just to clarify.
Representative Thatcher.
Now, it's my understanding that the Community Development Incentive Advisory Board is basically just a placeholder board for in case federal funds come in, that there really isn't a board per se. And that's why
I think that's partially right, although I would be a little bit wary of giving you a direct answer to that. So perhaps we could ask Mr. Krager to come up and help us once again.
He's smiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rick Krager, Deputy Director, Oregon Housing Community Services. And to answer Representative Thatcher's question, there is a board established that we have used up to this point, and what we would do is, if there were any other activity come forward, we would reestablish the board, come back, and vote upon those projects that are acceptable under the old Community Incentive Fund rules.
Please.
So there is no... There's just a name right now, and it really isn't filled with people.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thatcher, it is filled with people right now because we've had to use it to approve the preservation loans. So the people would remain on the board if they wish, but knowing that there's not going to really be any more activity going forward, at least unless the legislature changed their mind and wanted to reinvigorate the Community Incentive Fund.
Because
I know the question's going to come up on the floor. Okay, so you're reducing oversight, and I would like to make it clear that this really isn't the case, or maybe it is. Maybe you could tell me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thatcher, no, in fact, you're not reducing oversight. You are essentially getting rid of a redundant process where the oversight is already provided by the department as well as the State Housing Council.
Thank you.
Thank you. Quick question. Representative Gilley.
I'm not going to belabor this. Just something occurred to me. I've got an exemplary little senior housing project in my district. It's been here for 40-some years. If there were any money, would they be eligible for a deferred maintenance grant? Speaking of deferred maintenance earlier today.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gilliam, certainly to the extent that a project is in need of some kind of maintenance or rehab and it is serving the population in which our grants have authority to serve, yes, they would be eligible. They'd have to go through, obviously, application.
I guess what I meant to say was, would they,
sorry, follow up, please.
Eligible, could they apply for it? Potential grant is what I meant to say. You don't know if they'd be eligible.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gill might have to look and see who they're actually serving and if they qualified, but to the extent they did, yes, they would be eligible.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Very good. Further discussion? Looks like we're ready to vote on that motion then, I believe. Representative Holvey's motion to send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And if you could please call the roll.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative
Witt?
Aye. Vice Chair Vance?
Aye.
Chair Reed?
Chair votes aye. And the motion carries. Representative Holby, would you be willing to carry House Bill 2257?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2257. As we mentioned, House Bill 2258, sadly, is still in need of the fiscal statement, although you'll note the amendment that I think would accomplish the goals that we talked about before, and we'll carry that over to our next agenda and talk about it then. And we'll open now a work session on House Bill 2261. Barbara.
Authorizes the Department of Housing and Community Services to grant loans financed with the sale of tax-exempt bonds coupled with Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit Program tax credits to qualified affordable housing developers.
Thank you. You'll recall that this needs to go to the Department of Revenue, or the Committee on Revenue, excuse me, has a subsequent referral. So our appropriate motion, if there isn't discussion, is to send it to the Revenue Committee with a due pass recommendation. And I'd be open to that motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2261 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2261 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there discussion? Seeing none. One more roll call vote today, please.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Aye. Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Vance? Aye.
Chair Reed?
Chair votes aye. And the motion carries. House Bill 2261 sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation and referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Closed the work session on House Bill 2261. Committee members, as we compiled the agenda for today, we were focused on initiatives related to sustainability in higher education and the Sustainable Oregon Schools Initiative, which is a little bit more focused, I believe, on
K-12 system expressed an interest in updating us on their work. So it's not on the agenda. I'm going to stay and hear that report. It would be, since it wasn't on the agenda, I recognize that you all may have other obligations, but if you have time, I'd encourage you to stay and listen to this brief presentation. I suggested that we wouldn't have a lot of extra time, but we can hear from them. Lori Stoll is here. If you'd like to come forward and give us a quick update, that'd be terrific.
Chairman Reed and committee members, thank you for fitting me in today. Oregon's K-12 system plays a critical...
Excuse me just a second. If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Lori Stoll, and I manage the Sustainable Oregon Schools Initiative for a group called the Zero Waste Alliance. Oregon's K-12 system plays a critical role for Oregon's sustainability goals. For a starter, it houses and feeds 20% of the state's population, leaving a footprint that must be considered. K-12 is even more important for its education role, one that touches everyone in the state. Education is seen as a great hope for a more sustainable world. However, the most educated nations leave the deepest ecological footprints. So, educating citizens to higher levels with today's system seems not to be sufficient for sustainability. Education for sustainability involves the formal curriculum in the classroom, the student interaction with the facility and operations, and community interactions. It's a key and vital element in moving towards sustainability. We need to reorient education, and that means to include more principles, skills, perspectives, and values related to sustainability, integrating environment, economy, and society in the education, basing it on local needs, but recognizing that fulfilling local needs often has global consequences. So education about sustainable development is an awareness lesson. Education for sustainable development is the use of education as a tool to transform our societies to achieve sustainability. So we need that tool. Sustainable practices have to be modeled by the school district itself as part of sustainability education. Otherwise, students learn it's important, but there will never be time or resources to actually implement it. K-12 provides the foundation for job and college preparation for the future workforce. It's in a position to educate everyone for sustainability, whatever path they move on to. This helps support equity across all geographic areas of the state. Much of the workforce never goes beyond K-12, but they have an equal need to understand sustainability. The Sustainable Oregon Schools Initiative is a focal point for K-12 districts and the many organizations and efforts involved. School district superintendents are coming to us, and we're helping them learn from one another and to connect them with the K-12 sustainability leaders in the U.S. To just give one example, the Gladstone School District began their sustainability journey by looking at a building that they wanted to construct as a green building. They put together an advisory committee that involved a lot of community members from many disciplines, and as they learned what sustainability meant, they integrated more and more things into the effort, and it's become a huge success with the community completely tied in, and it led them to look then at their curriculum, and they're reorienting their whole curriculum, going through it and moving forward, realizing how much more they still want to do. So it's really a great example led by their superintendent. Even in the current economic climate, this is an opportunity. We need to set sustainability goals, for instance, for resource management, but to see them not just as someone's pet project, which is typical in K-12, to make it integrated as part of how the district does its business, and simultaneously increase awareness and knowledge about education for sustainability and what that's all about. So don't forget K-12 in this discussion to move the state forward with sustainability. Please look for ways for the state to demonstrate that K-12 sustainability efforts and education for sustainability are critical for Oregon. Every business and college in Oregon can move forward faster if the incoming students and workers come in prepared to make sustainability happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Appreciate you coming forward and reminding us of K-12. It certainly wasn't our intent to leave it out, but your eagle eye caught an overlap between your work and what we're discussing today. So I think it's reasonable to expect that that will be an element of our discussion going forward, and we're certainly better off for having your perspective on it. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Very well. I think we've exhausted our agenda in the words of our Revenue Committee Chair, so we will adjourn for today unless there are any comments for the good of the order. See you on Tuesday. We're adjourned.